Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Smuggler's Run Capacity, a year full of Disneyland events,
the Candlelight Processional, World of Color returning, pin trading, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of December 5th, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to David for joining the annual pass holder level, Jeanette H. and Trinidad A. for supporting us at the cast member level, and thank you to our current supporters, Alex W. and Kate A. for increasing your monthly support. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live show recordings, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you want to join in the fun, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
We're getting closer to our next patron milestone. Once we reach our next goal, all of the current supporters will be entered into a monthly drawing to get a free item from our merchandise store at dlweekly.net/store. Even just a dollar goes a long way to continue bringing Disneyland news, information, and discussion coming your way.
And now it's Teresa's favorite part of our live monthly Patreon broadcast. We get to choose our next Patreon guest. So, drum roll or box shake noising, please. Well, congratulations. This person is currently listening right now and watching our live stream. So, congratulations to Janie M. You are our next Patreon guest. So, congratulations, Janie.
Yes, congratulations. I don't know either. I also want to say to everybody who's watching right now, we will also be taking the Christmas holiday off, so there will be no episode that week. Just heads up.
Well, if you need some help planning your next trip to the parks, remember to contact our friends over at Concierge. Mike and James work hard to make sure you and your family will have a magical time at the parks. Head on over to dlweekly.net to find a link to their website to find out more.
Now let's get to the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, at 9 o'clock this evening, we are proud to present the Very Merry Christmas Parade. This holiday pageant will feature characters from many of Walt Disney's classic motion pictures. That's the Very Merry Christmas Parade at 9 o'clock.
And all of us here at Disneyland are wishing you and yours Happy New Year.
The Candlelight Processional was this past weekend at Disneyland, and it was a spectacle just like every other year. The narrator this year was Chris Pratt from Guardians of the Galaxy and Jurassic World. He did a great job except for one funny moment where he said consume instead of conceive when referring to Mary conceiving, not consuming, Jesus. The show was delightful to watch online since most folks could not see it in person.
You know, I think he handled this very gracefully, though, and he just rolled with it, and he just kind of was like, well, whoops. My bad, wrong word, and just kept on going. I think he did really well. I think most people would have been really embarrassed if they would have had that slight goof up, but he just kind of laughed it off and continued on.
A pure professional, like you would expect. The show itself looked pretty cool. This is a Disney bucket list item for me, too, is to go see the Candlelight Processional. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think is the coolest is they've got the trumpeters on top of the train station, yes. Which I just think is awesome.
Yes. There's been talk online about the lack of holiday decor in Fantasyland. It remains one of the very few areas of the parks that hadn't received any decorations. This season, they finally added some garland to the buildings in Fantasyland that have small flourishes that match the attraction or the area they are in. Let's hope that the seasonal decor continues to improve around the entire resort.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were saying that they really wish that Disney, because they do such a great job on like Buena Vista Street and in Cars Land and of course Main Street. Frontierland has had a lot of holiday decorations for a while. Even Critter Country has some flourishes. And I know people were kind of disappointed because Fantasyland is such a great integral part of the whole park. Yeah. Why do they not have anything? And of course, Tomorrowland, I don't think really has anything either. So Tomorrowland and Fantasyland are lagging behind the rest. Mm-hmm. Even Toontown has some pretty decent decorations, but it's good to see that they're starting. I think that this is kind of how they started with a couple of the other lands too, where, you know, they just did a couple little things and then it'll eventually get bigger. So good. I'm glad that people are happy. What do you think?
Yeah, and it is really neat because if you pay attention to the details of, I mean, they're just kind of traditional garlands that they have strung up around the area. But if you really pay close attention to detail on them, for instance, the garland that's over by Snow White Scary Adventures actually has apples mm-hmm. in it. So I think it's kind of neat that they're mixing the magic into just the traditional holiday decor.
Yeah, I agree. Well, World of Color could be lighting up the night again very soon. Disney has filed a permit for a temporary riser for a media event for the show. There is no date attached to the permit, but we think it could be soon from the activity that has been witnessed in the area, like we've covered on previous episodes. So, excited?
Yes, I hope that this is real, and I hope that it's coming sooner rather than later. I am sad that it did take so long for them to get whatever issues fixed. I'm glad that there's light at the end of the tunnel, though.
It's been almost a year, though.
There's light, and there's water jets, and there's projection screens at the end of this tunnel. Well, this week, the Orange County Register published an article laying out the entire year's worth of events at the Disneyland Resort. The list includes the January 18th premiere of Mickey's Magic Mix, January 25th, return of Mickey's Soundsational Parade, Dapper Day on April 14th, Bats Day on May 5th, the expected June timeframe for Galaxy's Edge, and more. To see the full list, check out the show notes at dlweekly.net.
Yes, there is a ton of events that are scheduled to happen this next year, and they kind of, they have 32 events wow. on this list, and they say, here's how to plan your trips around these 32 events. So, obviously, definitely making it a situation where if you're an annual pass holder, there's plenty of things to do throughout yeah. the year. And of course, you know, this includes things that happen every year, like the Halloween time and, you know, Christmas time and stuff like that. So all of those things, of course, are on the calendar already for that as well. But it also includes things like that move around a little bit sometimes, like Dapper Days and, you know, Gay Days and Bats Day and stuff like that. So they've got some great pictures, too, to kind of show some of the stuff. So there's a lot to do this year. If you yes. have tickets or you're in that area, plenty to do. With all of the events happening all the time at the resort, you might want to know how to navigate the unofficial events like Bats Day, Dapper Day, or Gay Days, to name a few. MousePlanet.com posted an article detailing the process. They cover everything from attire to the expo space and more. Please follow the link in the show notes at dlweekly.net to see all of the tips. So it's kind of nice because a lot of these unofficial events aren't like they don't all operate the same. Mm-hmm. So they kind of give some tips on, you know, dressing or asking people to take pictures, that kind of thing, because, you know, it can be kind of awkward if you want to go up to another guest in the park and get a picture because they look, you know, super dressed cute or something. So
Brooks Barnes, a reporter from the New York Times, was able to ride a test version of the Smuggler's Run attraction coming to Galaxy's Edge back in November, and he says that the pod that you ride in seats 6, but they have enough pods to handle 1,800 guests per hour in the new attraction. For comparison, the Pirates of the Caribbean handles 3,400 guests per hour, and the Jungle Cruise handles 1,800 guests per hour. So not a super high-capacity ride, but it could be worse. So I'm going to think positively on this. And really, if you think about it, Jungle Cruise, that line seems to move pretty well. Mm-hmm. So
that's what I was
it'll
thinking,
be good.
Too.
I yeah. think it'll be good.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was actually surprised that the Jungle Cruise didn't have a higher capacity. I thought yeah. it would be closer to Pirates. But I guess you're loading more people in per boat at the Jungle Cruise. But because you're loading more people in and it's not in rows, it does take longer to load and unload.
Yes, yeah.
So that probably slows down. But I don't know. I'm really happy that they're going to have that many guests per hour because I was worried it was going to be like 1,200 or less. Yeah. And that was going to make that line, which is already going to be crazy, even worse.
You know, and I think a ride vehicle with 6 sounds like about the right amount too, because sometimes when you go in things like Toy Story Mania or Buzz Astro Blasters where it's really just kind of by 2s or maybe by 4s, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like you swap out the line. You know, the line doesn't move quite as quickly
right.
because just because of time to load and unload mm-hmm. with fewer people in there. So it's nice that it's a little bit bigger. So
yeah.
good things. And now as long as it, you know, all we needed was some sort of Omnimover system for this for it to be perfect, but I don't think you'd have the right experience in an Omnimover type situation for this attraction.
Well, speaking of Galaxy's Edge, the Millennium Falcon in the new land has been completed. New aerial pictures prove this. There doesn't seem to be a ton of stuff left to complete on the exteriors of the land other than painting, paving, and filling the venues with furniture and merchandise.
Ooh, we're getting so close to the end, guys.
I feel like at this point it's just a lot of like tweaking the actual attractions.
I'm sure it is, yeah.
And then making sure everything goes well, and then of course... But I mean, we're in December. You know, if it opens in June... That's only 6 or 7 months away.
It's really not that long.
And of course, you're going to probably have cast member previews, and you're probably going to have, you know, it's probably going to open before June would be my guess, but we'll find out.
Maybe not to the public before June, but just think about it, because all we get to see really is aerial photos of things. So we don't really have an idea of what the details of walking around the streets look like yet. That might look very rough and very much like a construction zone still. Even though they have most of the rock work done, the show buildings are done, you know, there's still, I could see it still taking a lot of time to, you know, do the final touches, put the final coats of paint, all the details. Because I feel like this is going to be a very detailed, very immersive feeling land. So they've got to pay attention to every tiny little minute thing. So
absolutely.
Well, there's a possible new system being tested on Toy Story Midway Mania that will allow groups of 1, 2, or a small 3, which is 2 adults and a child, to queue separately from the main queue. This should help reduce the wait time for the attraction for those party sizes.
I read this. This was kind of like a breaking thing today from Laughing Place reported on this. Somebody on Reddit had posted a picture of they got this card to go line up in this other, you know, queue for the smaller parties. And I don't know. Maybe it's just that I haven't ridden it enough, but I thought that for Toy Story Minute, like, your normal group size is going to be 1, 2, or a small 3. You know what I mean? I feel like those are the common sizes. Like, it's rare to have, like, a larger party than that. Or am I totally missing?
I mean, that all depends on... I've gone and waited in that queue with both party sizes. Last time, obviously, it was just Vern and I. The time before that, there were 6 of us, so...
Yeah.
All depends on your group, so it all depends. I think this is nice, though, because just think about it. Like, when you get to the platform and you're ready to load, and there's, you know, they just seated 1 or 2 people, and so they have that second card open, and they say, okay, how many in your party? You're like, 6. Oh, well, here, 2 of you can go on this one, and then we're going to put the rest of you back here. So it just kind of, I could see maybe how it smooths loading the attraction out. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how it works. I'm always in favor of Disney trying different line formations and stuff to make things faster and better for everybody. So let's hope it does that. Well, work continues around the parks to increase the capacity of the paths around the park. Another planter near the Haunted Mansion is behind walls as they work to move an outdoor vending cart into the area and out of the path. Another planter outside of Star Tours and Tomorrowland is also being worked on to open up the area near the entrance of the land. Nothing too small is being overlooked. Even a small area near the Matterhorn has been moved to widen that area of the park. So they're definitely trying to squeeze every last inch out of the pathways that they possibly can to make sure that there's enough room for everybody.
I'm just pouting. These poor planters. No, but seriously, like I've said before, you know, I get that they have to really get as many inches as they possibly can for pathway mobility and whatever you want to, you know, because they are going to be expecting larger crowds. I get that. But the thing that just makes Disneyland so magical to me is the fact that they had things in place like planters, like real trees, real plants, you know, that sort of thing. So it just really makes me sad that they're scaling back on these things just to get more pavement.
Yeah. You know, and I totally agree with you. You know, Disneyland really is made to be a park because of the planters and everything that's there. So if you take more of that stuff out, sure, it's more comfortable because you're not, you know, fighting with a bunch of people to get somewhere. But at the same time, what are you losing? You know, would you rather fight a little more and have a better looking park, or would you rather have a less green park, you know?
And have more elbow room.
Yeah.
The Play Disney Parks app that can be downloaded for iOS and Android has been updated to include some more interactivity in the park. Esmeralda the Fortune Teller on Main Street, Fortune Red from New Orleans Square, and more holiday editions are included in this update. iTunes playlists related to the park are also being added to the iOS version, so you can find the songs around the park and add them to your playlist.
How do you feel about this? I like the interactivity with like the fortune teller and stuff like that. I'm interested to see how the playlists situation works.
See, I don't really know how I feel about it until I play around with it. But one thing I do really like about this, and this kind of relates back to our last news story about the planters and them kind of trying to clear the pathways, figuratively, you know, literally there. This, I feel like you're kind of doing it here too, because you're pulling more people and you're making more things interesting that aren't just attractions. These are things that people can do and like kind of travel off the beaten path to go and explore. So I think that's actually, I think it's pretty smart. It's something else to do. It's something unique. Plus, like I said, it's just getting people out of the walkways.
Yeah. I was wondering if they were ever going to bring something like this to Disneyland, because I had seen the Tim Tracker. Doug, that's for you. Did you like hashtag save Teresa's planters?
Got in my little planter soapbox here.
So I was wondering if they were going to bring some stuff, because at the Magic Kingdom in Disney World, they have something similar to this where they have like a game that you can go around and get cards and do different things. So why would they not do that at Disneyland? Because Disneyland is more of a regulars park. So if you were to add these things, it would add things for people to do that are not just ride the attraction.
Maybe we're baby stepping towards that. That's what I'm going to hope for. So the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game that they have at Walt Disney World is just so, so neat. I unfortunately, last time I visited the park, I didn't know that it existed until, unfortunately, I think it was either like the second to last or the last day of our trip. So I didn't actually get to play the game myself, but I did have a blast watching other people kind of unlock some of these secrets that were around the park. I will never forget, we were in line waiting at the Jungle Cruise there, and I don't know what they did to make it happen, but all of a sudden this full human skeleton like rose up out of the water near the waiting area and did its little thing and then like went back in, and I was just in awe that that just happened on command because a guest had done something in a game. You know, usually stuff, I mean, that's a pretty big thing to have as part of just this, you know, kind of little side game thing. Yeah. That's like, it's not the main attraction, but still, it was really amazing.
Yeah, and that in and of itself can become an attraction. So I hope Disney does more of this stuff for sure.
Yes, definitely. Well, now we take a trip over to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us, and usually does, with Disney trivia. He's going to read us the questions, Tag and I will attempt to answer them, and then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have this week for us, James?
Well, this week we're going to feature three questions from our patron, Tim. But to set it up, they're all about my favorite attraction. And so in order to set it up...
Space Mountain.
Hang on, wait. Tag, first trivia question. What is James's favorite attraction?
You got it. That is the first question. So
we have to clarify, though, first. Are you sarcastically saying your favorite attraction, or do you mean your actual favorite attraction?
Sincerely, my favorite attraction.
Space Mountain.
Well, how am I supposed to know this? You have an unfair advantage.
Well, if you listen to Disneyland Weekly when I was hosting, you would know this one.
I have no idea.
When in doubt, trust
your co-host.
I'm going
to say Star Tours.
All right, let's see how you did. The second question. When in the queue for Space Mountain...
I'm changing my answer to Space Mountain.
It's a bold strategy.
I'm acting on a whim.
So when in the queue for Space Mountain, you might notice labels indicating the number of the space station that the attraction is based on. What is it? Ooh. And if you need a hint, Tim has provided one. All right, so
hang on, what's our hint?
Your hint is it's based on an important date for the attraction.
For the attraction?
Yes.
Oh, then I'm probably wrong.
A very important date for Space Mountain.
78.
I said 2055, because I thought that it was 2055, but I don't think it's right.
That it was 2055.
All right. The next one from Tim is, above the launch and loading area for the attraction, there's a shuttle suspended.
Oh, yeah.
The shuttle also prominently has a number displayed. It's also a very important date.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you remember it?
Tim, you're killing us.
That one's 2055. One of these two things is 2055.
Something in Space Mountain has the numbers 2055 stamped on it. Do these things only have numbers or are there letters too?
There are letters on it. I'll give you the first two letters on this one are DL. I wonder what they could stand for. And then there's a number following.
DL 2055.
I'm sorry. What's your answer, Tag? I don't think I've heard it enough yet.
His answer for everything is 2055.
You know, if you say it enough, eventually, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Now, did you say this? Okay, sorry. Important date for the attraction or just important date overall?
This one is also important for the attraction's history.
I'm way overthinking this. I'm going to say DL 3050.
All right, and the last one from Tim. I was looking at that shuttle. Now that you've really pictured it in your head, doesn't it really seem familiar? It's inspired by a spacecraft from an iconic future movie. Do you know what movie it is?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say Lost in Space.
I'm going to say... So you said Lost in Space. I'm going to say... What's the movie with HAL 9000? Oh, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Ooh, you're probably right with that.
We'll find out how they did, especially that really tricky first question after the discussion. Stay tuned.
All right.
I'll submit a trivia question that's, what is Vern's favorite attraction?
Haunted Mansion.
No, it's not. This week, we are going to talk about something that both Tag and I have been doing a little personal research about, and we figured we'd share kind of what we've been learning about this topic. It's something that we've kind of both been interested in, but never really have participated in yet. Keyword yet, for, you know, during our time at the parks. But this next trip, we're going to have plenty of extra free time to be able to participate.
She says this.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about pin trading today and kind of just some basics about it, the history about it, all that kind of fun stuff. What you need to know to get started. Like I said, by no means are Tag and I experts, but we have been doing research to get into it ourselves. So we figured we would go ahead and talk with you guys about it. So I'm sure we probably have some avid pin traders out there that I'm sure know all of the ins and outs. So if you guys have any tips for pin trading that maybe we don't discuss, or, you know, something else that you want to talk about, please just let us know and just email us at feedback@dlweekly.net.
Yes. So let's start with what we always start with things is let's start with the history. So Teresa, of course, you know, loves to do all of the history of things and where things started and everything. So tell us about the humble beginnings of pin trading.
You know, it's amazing to me, but pin trading is very new, relatively. It actually just began in 1999 is when it first kind of
You say
boomed.
Just like 99 was like yesterday. That really was 20 years ago.
Yeah, but in the history of Disneyland suppose. Being there since 1955, okay. And I feel like pins have been around longer than...
It has felt that long, yes.
You know, so obviously we have way more collectors' pins now, since there's a whole kind of sub-community and subculture that is around them. But yeah, so it really boomed and really started in 1999, and it was actually created by the parks as a positive way for guests to interact with cast members and also with each other. So it kind of became this craze, and it was just something else to do, really. It wasn't really that, you know, I don't know, and I didn't think they thought it was going to become as crazily popular as it is today.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because there are over 120,000 different types of pins that are available to trade and collect. Mind you, there are some that are worth far more than others and might be really, really rare. But, you know, that's kind of the fun with pin trading is, you know, finding that diamond in the rough. And it's interesting because it's just all kind of about you. There's really no right or wrong way to do it. There's, you know, you shouldn't always just look for Mickeys, or you shouldn't always just go for the goofy pins. It's just whatever you want and whatever you feel is important to you and valuable to you. Now, obviously, there are limited edition pins and that kind of thing, and we'll get into that later. But there is no right or wrong way to trade pins.
Now, see, I have a problem with... So, the whole idea of pin trading is hard for me to get over, because when I buy a pin, I buy it because I really like it. And then I wouldn't want to part with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, just because you... So what a lot of people do is they go into the parks with the pins that they're not feeling attached to. They have, you know, pins that are specifically set aside for trading purposes. And then you keep those special ones. You keep those at home so somebody else doesn't try and ask you to trade for them. Now, with pin trading, there is an etiquette to it. So if I come up to you and say, hey, Tay, I really like your Pirates of the Caribbean pin that you've got there, do you want to trade? You're not obligated to trade with me. Right. You can politely say no, or you know, you could even go to great lengths and say, you know, actually I really like this other, I don't know, Haunted Mansion pin, and you could have me buy that pin for you and then we trade. There's all sorts of different things you can do with it, but you're not obligated to trade your pins if you don't want to.
But the cast members are.
Cast members, yeah. So if you go up and approach a cast member and want to trade pins with a cast member, as long as you have a legitimate Disney pin, because unfortunately there are fakes out there, they will trade with you. And so they don't really say no. And we kind of learned this when talking with Shelley, is Disney actually provides them with the cast member trading pins. And so they don't have as big of an investment in it as, you know, us the guests do. We actually have to go out and we have to purchase these pins to be able to trade them. So I think it's more just set up as something to do and just kind of another mini attraction, I guess, in and of itself. And so they don't really say no, like I said, unless it's a counterfeit or, you know, not a true Disney pin.
Now, one thing I love about pins in general, not just the trading aspect, but in general, they are a great souvenir to have, because we travel, we fly there and stuff. It is hard to get some of the bigger items back. So I can buy 10 or 15 pins on a trip that I really enjoy, and they don't take up much space. Even when I get them home, I can just put them up on a board or on a wall or something. So I think that, you know, even if you were trading, the ones that you trade for that you like and want to keep, those you could, they're easy to transport. They're easy to show off. Again, like Teresa said, you don't have to trade with anybody. So you could just wear them as a sense of pride, you know, or whatever of things. They also make pins for like special events and stuff, which is really nice. I actually have one of my favorite pins that I have is a Pirates of the Caribbean pin that has the day that the movie premiered at the resort.
Oh yeah!
So I got my hands on one of those, which was really nice. And of course, they have specialty pins that are for annual pass holders only. They have specialty pins that are only for Disney Visa card members. I believe there's even some Club 33 pins, which would be amazing.
All sorts of specialty pins, though. But the thing that's cool to me is, so when you go to one, there's several different stores around the resort that you can go into to buy pins. You know, maybe if you want to, they do have starter packs there, or if you just want a pin to purchase for your own, you don't really want to get into the whole pin trading thing. Anyways, you can walk into these shops, and the amazing thing to me is these pins are retail value anywhere from like $9 upwards to $120 for some of these pins. Your typical pins that you're going to be doing the trading, though, range between like $9 and roughly $13 per pin. Roughly $9 to $16 per pin. But they do have these pins. They're called jumbo pins. And I really haven't paid that close of attention and really have seen that many for sale in the park. But they're massive. Hence why they're called jumbo pins, giant pins, and those can range $120 for these pins.
Wow.
Crazy.
I have a pin set. In fact, it's right here on our set. I don't know the price or anything back on it, but it was from right after the resort kind of opened. I would say this is probably from like 2003, I would say. And it's got a bunch of pins. It's a big center pin and then four pins that have Space Mountain, California Screamin', Matterhorn Bobsleds in the Disney Animation Building, and then in the middle it has Sleeping Beauty Castle and Grizzly River Run. So it's kind of like a set, and it's in a nice... I just realized.
So this was when Right after California Adventure had opened?
Yeah, so I think it was a couple years after it had opened that I was able to get this. But it was so nice because it has like this nice case that it comes in. So I think this counts as one of those larger sets or what larger pins that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you were going to get to this next, but I think something that some people might want to know is, so you have your pins. Well, what do you attach them to?
Oh, well, whatever you want to. But the more popular thing that people do is they purchase different themed lanyards. Now, you can either get those at the resort so that they're Disney themed, or you can just get a plain colored lanyard. You know, what? Again, there's no rules, so it's whatever you want to do. You can, most people wear them on lanyards and kind of support them on their lanyards and show them off, I guess. And that's kind of a good way if you want to trade with other guests to be able to know if they are pin traders or not. They do also have these, they're really cool. They're almost like a bag, but it's actually a, I don't even know how to describe it.
Like
it's
a folder.
Book. Yeah, it's a soft book. It's like a soft-sided book that zips and has all of these pages that have these pieces of fabric in between so that you don't have your pins kind of bumping and rubbing on each other. But it's a nice way to transport your pins and also be able to show them off, so you can lay out this book and open it on a table or whatever, so you can do some trading with people or whatever you want. So
sure,
depends on how many pins you want to be carrying around with you while you're in the park.
I think it could be cool if you're there, if you're an annual pass holder, say, and you were there on a day and like this was your day to go and buy new pins or trade pins or whatever, to have that book with you and kind of you know, because the pin trading community is a fairly large community.
It is. It's very
and
large.
And people are, you know, it's like collecting anything else. It's like baseball cards or anything else. People are really proud of their collections. So showing them off in a folder or something like that would be super nice. Now, there is a type of lanyard that we were talking about earlier that at the end of the lanyard, at the bottom part, you can get that has like a little plastic like holder, and you can put your park media, ticket media in there, or your annual passport, or people have said they put cash and ID.
Pocket.
Yeah, it's like a little pocket. It's got a little Ziploc kind of thing at the top, a little plastic thing. I do not recommend these because the tab that holds them to your lanyard is not very strong. And if you have your wallet, or if you have your you know, your ID in there, you have some cash in there, you maybe have your annual pass holder or park ticket in there, I feel like it's way too easy to like snag on something and then it gets torn off and you don't even realize it. And then there goes a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So you do have to be careful if you do get one of those. But you know, whatever works for you, I guess.
Yeah. I just wouldn't trust it. That's all.
So we're going to kind of move on and talk about the different types of pins. So there are just kind of normal pins, the ones that you see out in the shop. They're technically called open release pins. And those mean that they're readily available. You can find them in the shops, online, wherever you can find Disney pins sold. These pins are readily available. They're not hard to find. You can walk into any shop and almost be guaranteed to see these pins. Now, obviously, they are limited quantities to some extent, just because obviously we only are going to be producing them for a certain period of time, or they ordered, you know, X amount and they sell them till they're gone, you know, that type of thing. But for most places, they're very easy to get your hands on, I guess would be a good way of saying it. But there are then also ones that are called limited release pins. And as you can imagine, they're limited, and either the fact that they only produce so many, so maybe they only produce 2,000 of these pins, or maybe they're only producing them for a certain period of time. Like, for example, there were some limited release pins available during Pixar Fest that if you were to visit the parks today, you may not be able to see them because either they only made a certain amount of them or they were only available during Pixar Fest. Kind of depends on how they define that and how they did it that way. But so a lot of those, you'll be able to find like commemorative pins for different things, celebratory things for different anniversaries, other milestones. And also this kind of has some for specific groups. So like Disney Vacation Club has their own limited release pins, annual pass holders. There's different pin trading events that might have their own limited release pins, holiday events. Those kind of special occasions will have their own limited release pins.
Yeah, so the Hidden Mickey ones, at first, the very first time that I saw these, I thought that they were just regular ones that happen to have like a little Hidden Mickey on them. But actually, they are released by Disney, like Teresa had said earlier, and tradable with cast members only. So these are the ones that the cast members have. And so you can easily spot it because it's a hidden Mickey. It's a silver Mickey symbol. It'll be located on the pin front, and it'll say hidden Mickey pin with the number within the series etched on the back. They have lots of hidden Mickey pins available to trade at the parks between all the different cast members. I actually think these are cool. I like the idea that there is a hidden Mickey.
Yeah.
So even if the pin isn't that exciting, the fact that it has the hidden Mickey is kind of cool.
Well, and the fact that you had to get it from a cast member is also a cool thing. So in and of themselves, I feel like they are kind of their own special limited edition type pin anyways, because you would have had to get them from a cast member in the park specifically. Mm-hmm. And if you go, I've even just looked at what the cast members have to offer for pins. I've never actually... Like I said, I haven't actually done any trading, but I've also been fascinated by like the little displays that they have or like the little pouches that they have that they are trading from. And some of these pins, they're really basic, but they're just so unique. And I think to me, they're extra special since only cast members are giving these pins.
Yeah. 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 They're neat. And that's another thing I really like about the pins in general is that there's such a variety of them. You know, there's the characters, there's attractions, there's events, mm-hmm. If there's anything you're interested in that has to do with Disney in general or the parks, there's probably a pin about it. I have a fairly good pin collection, I would say. It's definitely one of my go-to souvenirs because, like I said, it's easy and I like growing my collection and it doesn't take up a lot of space, like I said earlier. I mean, I have a lot of stuff, like I have mugs and stuff that I collect too, but that stuff all takes up a lot of space and can get broken and, like, you know, it gets cluttered or whatever. But I actually have a corkboard next to my bed that I put all of my Disney pins on. And the funny thing too, and I know this is a Disneyland podcast, but other parks have started picking this up too. You can get pins at Universal. You can get pins at Knott's Berry Farm. So almost everywhere you go now, any type of theme park is going to have pins that you can add to a collection. Obviously, you're not going to trade those at Disneyland or whatever.
No.
But it's neat that other places have also picked this up as something that you can get for a souvenir or a keepsake. Now, there's another type of pin that we've kind of touched on already called scrappers, which are basically fake pins. They look kind of authentic, but there's some flaws in it. They're just some of them. I think didn't Shelley say that it was kind of hard to tell sometimes if they were
sometimes
fake or not?
Sometimes it is because a lot of them look very, very good, but there's certain things that Disney pins have. There's certain markings that a Disney pin have, and usually they're found on the back. And it has, like, the copyright symbol on the back. So I think people don't... If you don't know what you're looking for, you could be looking at a pin that looks great, and it's this beautiful Steamboat Willie. I don't know. For example.
Yeah.
And it looks great, and it looks awesome, and you're thinking, oh, wow, look at this really cool pin that I just got. And then either you trade it or you buy it online from, I don't know, eBay or someplace. And then when you get it, hopefully you didn't spend too much money or you didn't trade a super valuable pin for it. You get it and you might realize that, oh, wait, I don't think this is an actual Disney pin. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. You can keep that in your personal collection. The only problem with getting your hands on scrapper pins is if you're trading your pins in the park, those you're not able to trade those. Those you kind of have to, like I said, either if you want to hang on to them for your own personal collection or what, those are not allowed to be traded in the Disney pin trading community.
Right.
And so even the cast member that has to trade, that, you know, always will trade their pins with you, if you present a cast member with one of these scrapper pins that's not an authentic Disney pin, they will turn you down and they also will not trade with you. So hopefully nobody ends up accidentally getting their hands on some of these, thinking that they have all these great pins that they can trade, and then they go to the parks and then they're not able to trade them. So you just have to be aware that if you either go online and maybe buy a bunch of pins real cheap off of eBay or Amazon or someplace that's not directly Disney, it is very possible that you're getting some of these fake scrapper pins in the mix. Now, it could be legitimate and you could be getting a great deal online, but you just got to be careful.
Now, there are some things to look out for. So signs that you've purchased an authentic pin. The edges are smooth. The copyright date is clear on the back. The pin comes with a Mickey rubber backing. The colors are rich, like those sold in the parks. The paint is smooth and not flaking off, and the pin is not magnetic. So there are signs that you've received a scrapper in a trade. The copyright looks like a clump of metal and not a clear copyright symbol and year. The color looks faded and not rich. The paint flakes off, the edges are jagged and catch on clothing, they don't come with a rubber backing shaped like Mickey Mouse's head, the copyright doesn't match the authentic pins, the character doesn't look correct, e.g., you know, Snow White's hair is not black as ebony, and do the magnet test. It's not 100% not 100% accurate, but pretty darn close. If the pin sticks to a magnet, it's a fake. That's a really good way to test, because it's not 100%, but that is a good thing to look out for. Because honestly, up until we were kind of talking about this, I didn't even know that people made forgery pins.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it does happen. So now we're going to kind of move on to, so now we know kind of what we're looking for. We know what the different types of pins are, how to spot a fake. So we're going to move on to trade, how to trade, and the proper etiquette with trading. So like we've already talked about, is that the cast members have different lanyards or pouches, and they usually have roughly, I'd say, about 10 to 12 pins. So if you go into a shop and, you know, it's a shop that sells pins and you're not seeing a cast member either with a display or that has a lanyard or has, you know, a display of pins, you can always ask at the register and ask if they do trade pins too, because sometimes they just have like a little framed thing at the cash register to trade pins with too. So just because you don't see someone doesn't mean that that location doesn't also have pins to trade. But basically, as a cast member, if a guest approach them and they want to trade, they will trade with you. So one thing is, like we said, you have to make sure that you're offering up an authentic Disney pin to trade with an official rubber backing. So the other thing, you do have to be careful, because you can buy the Mickey shaped rubber backings in the stores, so that's not a sure way to know if you have an authentic pin or not, because unfortunately those can be swapped out. So just kind of go through and look at some of the other things that we discussed earlier to determine whether or not you've got a real pin or not. And I'm sure they're cast members, they're super friendly, so if you go up to them not knowing that maybe you don't have a correct pin, you know, maybe it is a fake pin and you just don't know, you know, they're not going to be mean to you about it. I'm sure they'll be very polite and they'll point it out to you. You know, maybe if it's your child that's trying to trade with them, they might even still trade since it's a kid, and obviously they don't, you know, they're not trying to get away with anything nasty. Uh-huh. You know, so it's up to the cast member.
I think if you're just open and honest, and if they point it out to you, and you know, and if you're not trying to get one over on them, I think that they'll try to make a magical experience for you.
Well, and speaking of magical experiences, some cast members like to have fun with doing their pin trading. So sometimes you can do trivia questions, or they give you some sort of a challenge and they offer you a mystery pin, and usually it's something a little bit more unique since you kind of had to work for it to get it. Other things that they do is they have pins on them that are actually turned over and turned upside down so you can't see what it is, and that's a mystery pin. So you get to trade with them and kind of not know, you know, it's the fun of, it's Russian pin trading roulette. You know, so it makes it a little fun. So it's not just, oh, I want that one. Okay, thanks. You know, so they do make it a little bit more fun.
You know, I just saw this and I did not know this. So this is a great thing to let people know. If a cast member is wearing a green lanyard, they can only trade with children.
That's interesting. I didn't know that either.
I did not know that. And then also be patient. If you want to trade with a cast member, wait till they're available. If somebody, you know, is ringing someone up, don't sit there and try to talk to them. I mean, just be courteous. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And then you can trade with other pin traders. And I don't know if I necessarily would do this, because I would feel weird about it. But I feel it's easier to approach cast members. But you can, you know, it's just, you know, you can talk with other people in the park. So I think that's good.
That's the other thing, too, is before you guys start doing any of the pin trading, make sure you kind of know what you have, because you don't want to accidentally trade something that's
valuable,
very valuable, or maybe limited edition, you know, or, you know, again, it's up to you what you want to do. So if it is something maybe that's more valuable, just as long as you know what it's worth is, so somebody doesn't give you some chintzy, not a knockoff pin, but, you know, some maybe less expensive, you could get it anywhere. It comes in one of the little starter packs. Not that special of a pin. They give you this for, you know, a pin that's very rare and worth quite a bit. You know, you kind of want to make sure that you're making a fair trade.
So in Disneyland, there are plenty of places to find pins. Some of the great places are over in Westward Ho Trading Company is a great spot. They have quite a big collection. I actually like going in there a lot because that's kind of like the whole store is just pins. You can find a lot of the special release pins and whatnot there. Over in California Adventure on Buena Vista Street, just a lot of the stores there have a good collection of pins as well. And also, a lot of people don't think about this, but Downtown Disney, there's a pin trading hut over by the monorail that is a good spot for that, to find that. And of course,
very large selection there. Yeah. And usually it's not very crowded, so you don't feel rushed. You don't feel like you're packed in like a sardine. You have plenty of time to browse through the almost the entire. It feels like you're looking at all of the pins available in the park in this one shop. So it's a great place to go.
Yes.
Downtown Disney is great for that. They have such a large selection in their shops there. And so many people, it's not as crowded and overrun feeling as some of the shops in the resort feel. It's great for that.
Yeah. So a couple places that like I didn't even think about is in Disneyland, you can go into guest relations and they actually have a book that you can look at different pins in there. And then, of course, the Emporium has a giant pin board that people can trade. Mm-hmm. They also sell a lot. We already talked about Westward Ho. They also have a board that you can sell through or look through to trade. The Pioneer Mercantile has a board that is there for you to be able to trade as well. Then over in Tomorrowland, the Star Traders and the Little Green Men's Shop, they also have some limited releases and stuff like that that you can get through there. And then cast member lanyards over in the Star Traders. Back in the Toontown, like a gag factory that, depending on if you believe the rumors, may or may not be going away. Mm-hmm. They also have some pin boards. And then Pooh Corner, actually. And I didn't even know Pooh Corner had any pin trading stuff.
That I had not noticed before either. Well, heading on over to California Adventure, if you go to Buena Vista Street, you can check out the Big Top Toys and the guest relations booth there. And over on Buena Vista Street, they do have that more interactive pin trading there where they either ask you questions or kind of make you work a little bit harder for your pins. So if that interests you, head on over there.
I enjoy that.
Russian River Outfitters. They have open release pins there and also a big pin board to trade from. And Paradise Pier. Now Pixar Pier, sorry, has different shops there that you're also able to do some pin trading with. There's also a cart right at the entrance of Pixar Pier, I believe. Last time I was there, I don't remember what the name of the cart was, but they had a great selection of pins at this little wagon right at the entrance, too.
There is no shortage of places that you can trade pins, and so you can definitely find plenty of places. And like I said, what do you like? What is your favorite thing about the pins or pin trading?
There's countless things. I think it's a really neat thing to kind of talk to people about. It's definitely a conversation starter, whether you're standing in line and somebody sees your pins and they really like them, not necessarily wanting to trade with you, but just
admiring.
Just admiring, just a conversation starter. I think it's really fun to kind of be on the hunt for the next great pin or the next amazing design or, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for specifically. I also think it's really fun and a great way to interact with cast members too, that you don't feel like I don't feel like I'm imposing as much if I'm doing a trade with them versus just sitting there and chit-chatting with them. And I'm sure it's kind of a nice little break for cast members too, something a little slightly different for them as well. But these pins, you guys, are beautiful. I don't know if you've ever taken the time to look at the pins that they have for sale in the different shops in Disney, but they are they're amazing. They're gorgeous. They're so detailed.
Well, and
the colors are so
Disney
vibrant.
Quality.
Yes, they're beautiful. It can be a little bit expensive to kind of get into pin trading, but the cool thing is they have all of these different starter packs available at the different Disney shops. So you can purchase a starter pack for less than if you were to purchase, you know, 5 pins on their own. And it's just a good way to kind of get into the pin trading world and have something to trade with. You know, maybe you're buying the starter kit that has, there was one really cool one that I like a lot. It's a Disney villains themed one.
Oh,
it comes
course.
With a really awesome Disney villains lanyard and it had like 4 or 5 villains pins on them. And there was one of the pins I really, really liked and I probably would have kept if I purchased it and then I would have traded the other ones out to see, you know, what else I could have gotten instead. So I just think it's great. So just to kind of recap, if you guys are going to start getting into pin trading like Tang and I are planning to do for our next trip, is just remember to kind of start small because you don't want to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to kind of get into this.
Yep.
Remember, there are over well over 100,000 pins out there, so it's very easy to kind of get overwhelmed. So just kind of start small. Remember to store your pins in a nice display when you're in the parks, and then also when you're at home. So, you know, whether it's a lanyard or one of those cool little book things, mm-hmm. if you want to carry that around. And there's all sorts of different ideas online of how you can store your special pins back at home.
Something we didn't talk about, but I think is good to note. When Teresa talked about the backings that you could buy mm-hmm. extras of,
oh, yes.
they also sell the ones that have like this little tool so you can actually like kind of screw it on.
Yes, you can.
Because on the lanyard, sometimes it can get loose and you don't want to lose a good pin either, or even just lose the backing. So you could get these little, there's a little screw on things. And that's what I did when I went to the parks because I didn't want to lose anything.
Right.
And I wasn't trading. But if you're trading, maybe you don't want to do that.
Remember to be polite, even though cast members are, you know, basically you know that a cast member will most likely trade with you. That doesn't mean that they absolutely have to trade with you. So just remember to be polite still. And, you know, just don't just kind of grab for their pins or grab for their lanyards without first asking. Because, again, you know, you don't want to assume things. Always ensure that you have a Disney pin to trade that has the Mickey backing on it. So if you're using those locking devices for your pins to ensure that they don't fall off during your trip, make sure you have some of the rubber backs with you too, so you're able to trade it with the rubber yep. back. Remember to check out the different shops and the different what do we call those, merchandise carts that mm-hmm. have all sorts of different boards that you can trade and browse through.
Make sure you know what you're trading.
Yes, make sure you know what you're trading. Remember our different ways to check to make sure that you don't have a scrapper pin or a fake pin.
And Bob in our chat just said a little hint for those looking locking pin backs. You can go to a hobby store where they sell model plane parts and get the part that keeps the wheel on the axle. It's the same thing, but much cheaper.
So the other really cool thing that I didn't know is that some Disney stores outside of the park will also do pin trading. So even if you're not in the resorts and you're just visiting your local Disney store, you might still be able to do some pin trading. I thought that was really interesting. We will post, because we did find a couple of websites that were separate from Disney that did only sell true Disney pins. So if you're looking to get a little bit better of a deal, there are some online communities that you can do pin trading online. But again, you just have to be really careful with that. So if you want to be sure that it's a real Disney pin, obviously buy it straight from Disney, or make sure you're trading with a cast member, because then you should be getting true Disney pins. Because I believe if cast members are feeling a little generous and say a child comes up to them and wants to trade and it ends up being one of those fake pins that we talked about, the cast member does not leave that then on their lanyard or on mm-hmm. their board for someone else to pick up. They put it in their pocket and just kind of move on. So you shouldn't ever have to worry about getting a fake pin from a cast member.
Yep. There's a lot to digest here, but yes. pin trading is fun, and I think it's one of those things that if you go and do it one day, you'll find that it's actually really fun and not that hard or challenging, and I think cast members really like doing it, because it's something fun that they get to do instead of just doing the normal cast member-y stuff. I would say almost every cast member has a lanyard that you can trade stuff off of, so if you see like somebody doing, you know, guest control or something that, you know, they're just kind of standing there directing traffic or whatever, perhaps that would be a good time, you know, while they're waiting for a show or something, it would be a good time maybe to check and kind of chat with those folks that are kind of out there just kind of by themselves and nobody's really engaging with them. That'd be a good time to do that kind of things. I just think it's kind of cool. I like the variety and everything.
I just like how there's a sub community of Disney, of some other Disney activity. And the fact that they have there's different meetups and different events that are kind of around this pin trading world too, is just interesting and really exciting to me.
So is there anything that you guys, any tips you have for pin trading or anything like that that we didn't talk about? Go ahead and send us an email at feedback@dlweekly.net, and we will be happy to talk about it on the next episode and share it with everybody else.
Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat that we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. Please consider joining supporters like Georgia W and head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
If you want to have a voice in the podcast and our discussion topics, please head over to dlweekly.net/vote to register your choice for the next discussion topic. We've been getting a lot of great responses, including this one that we covered today. So please keep up the great suggestions for the future of the show.
Well, now it's time to return to James over in Trivialand to get the answers to our trivia questions this week. I already know that I got them all wrong, so we'll see how well Tag did.
I guess.
We're just going to blame Tim. So the first
question, Tim.
Because all of the questions that Tim submitted were themed based on what happens to me, my favorite attraction. The first question was, what is my favorite attraction?
I said Space Mountain. Teresa said Star Tours.
And I thought that was a good guess.
And then she changed it to Space Mountain.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out why she changed her answer.
I don't know.
But I just had this feeling come over me.
Yeah, it was really good intuition to change it because Space Mountain is, in fact, my favorite attraction.
So the listeners may want to know, why is it your favorite attraction?
Oh, see, I'm a fan of coaster rides, and I really like the theming on the inside, how it's dark and how it feels like you should be running into other tracks the whole time throughout the ride, as well as just kind of the general feel of, like, the darkness with the stars. It feels very true to what it's supposed to be, and it's held up to the test of time.
Okay. Now, here's the million-dollar question. Do not feel swayed because you are on a Disneyland podcast. You have ridden Disneyland and Disney World Space Mountain. Ooh. Which one do you like better?
I don't know. I think I have to ride them both again to really make this decision.
I'd have to ride them back to back to know which one I like better.
I like the smoothness of Disneyland's, but I like the fact that there's two tracks next to each other in Florida.
That is neat, yes.
The second question, which kind of gave away the first answer.
not at all.
When in the queue for Space Mountain, you might notice labels indicating the number of the space station that the attraction is based on. What is it? And the hint was it's based on an important date for the attraction.
I don't remember.
Teresa said 78, and I said 2055.
Yeah, see, Teresa was actually a lot closer. The numbers are posted in numerous places throughout the queue in the exit area, and it's an homage to the year that Space Mountain opened.
That's what I was going for, and I knew
79 it. Or 77?
1977.
Ooh, so close.
So the numbers close. You see everywhere is SMS-077 Space Mountain Station.
Oh.
077.
Okay.
Third question was, above the launch and loading area for the attraction, there's a shuttle suspended. It has a prominently displayed number, and it's also based on an important date. Can you remember it?
I said DL 2055. Teresa said 3050.
And so it is DL dash, and then it's a reference to the year Space Mountain was opened after refurbishment.
So not 2055 or 3050.
So 2005?
Yep, DL05.
Oh, 05. Oh, okay. So I got that one wrong too. Sweet.
Yeah. So
I'm not feeling so bad now.
Not 2055, as you were adamant about.
I swore there was something. Well, whatever.
All right. So looking at that shuttle that you've now been picturing as you tried to find those numbers, it seems familiar. It's inspired by a spacecraft from an iconic future movie. Do you know what movie that is?
Teresa said Lost in Space, and I said 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Tay, you got it right. It is based on the interplanetary spaceship from the movie 2001.
So I got 2 points in this whole thing.
Good job.
And Teresa got
none. She got a half.
she got a half point for changing her answer afterwards.
And you're going to give me a quarter point for 78 versus 77.
That's pretty good.
We're
I got 3/4 of a point.
That's we're doing the Price is Right scoring now, whoever was closest.
Yes. Oh, without going over, so I didn't get it.
Oh. Well, if you have trivia that you'd like to send to James to try
and
to
stump us.
Yeah, and try to stump us, send him an email at producer@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.